Jeffrey Hollander, the Responsibility Revolution delves into reforming capitalism to become a better economic system for everybody. When you talk about building a better capitalism, what's the heart of that idea for you?
Well, it's a big subject, but certainly one important aspect is that capitalism is not a singular idea that is practiced in a singular fashion. And what many people think of as capitalism and what many people think lies at the heart of capitalism, which is a free market, is not historically the way capitalism has always been practiced. And there have been a number of places over the last couple hundred years where capitalism has been a little bit more enlightened, a little bit more responsible, and not focused on a shareholder economy, but really focused on more of a stakeholder economy.
Explain that difference.
Well, a shareholder economy is what you hear when CEOs tell you that my number one responsibility is to take care of my shareholders, the people that have put money into my business. That is a extremely limited perspective, and in fact, a dangerous perspective, because if business focuses primarily on its investors, in today's environment, you cannot build a long-term successful business. You can't build a business that doesn't have a healthy relationship with the communities that you work in, with your employees, with your consumers, with the entire supply chain that creates and provides you with products, as well as NGOs. And the myopic view that we need to focus on our investors, and we need to ensure that we have a free market that lets business act in a way that's unencumbered by government, which, by the way, is a total fallacy. That has never been the case. You know, you can't describe the market we have today as a free market when the government gives Exxon $1 billion a month in benefits, a company that is profitable to the tune of $1 billion a week. So just because someone says it's so doesn't mean it's true. And I think people are very confused today about what capitalism is, has been, and can be in the future.
Now, are you saying, because we've heard from infancy probably, is that a corporation has a fiduciary responsibility to the shareholders and to nobody else, and that in fact where the interest of the shareholders it may conflict with the interests of the community, the company has to serve the shareholders?
Yeah, I mean, that's just not true. It's not true legally. It's one of those things where if it's said enough times, people think it must be true, but it's not. 30 years ago, James Burke, who was then the head of Johnson & Johnson, talked about how his consumers were his primary obligation, followed by his employees, followed by his investors. And there have been hundreds of people who have led large public companies who have very publicly said that we're not successful and we would never be successful by focusing primarily and first on our shareholders. Our shareholders benefit because we do a good job taking care of our customers, our employees, and our communities.
The subtitle of the Responsibility Revolution, Jeffrey Hollander, is How the Next Generation of Businesses Will Win. So, will win what?
Well, I think, you know, that's a great question, because I don't mean win in a traditional, exclusively economic fashion. Winning is about financial success, but we think about winning in a much more holistic, systemic fashion. So at Seventh Generation, winning is as much about winning for the environment, winning for our employees, winning for the communities that we do business in. If we're not winning in a holistic fashion, I don't consider that true success.
We talk a lot about corporate social responsibility, or CSR, but you don't even like the term CSR. What's wrong with it?
Well, first of all, I don't like the S in the CSR, because corporate social responsibility takes the idea of society and puts it in a compartment that's separate from the planet and the environment and the other key stakeholders that are critical for businesses to think about. So if we just talk about corporate responsibility, it's not that I don't like the word or the idea. What I don't like is what has been accomplished under its name and what passes for corporate responsibility. We live in a world where companies do something good with one hand and something bad with the other hand, and they call what they're doing with the good hand corporate responsibility, and they call what they're doing with the bad hand business as usual. We can't live in a world where companies like Toyota, and I know Toyota has been dragged through the mud enough, but, you know, warning signs were around almost 2 years ago when the company that wanted to be known as the world's leading provider of environmentally efficient automobiles was lobbying the state of California to avoid raising fuel mileage standards. So they were doing the exact opposite thing with one hand as compared to the other. And we find many, many businesses. We find chemical companies that give generously to the breast cancer fund while they make chemicals that are suspected of producing cancer. We find companies like British Petroleum, who had a great idea. You know, they were going to move beyond petroleum. I cut them some slack. Only less than 1% of their business was not based on petroleum. But if you're going to tell the world that that's what you are and that's what you're going to do, you need to be committed to it beyond the temporary challenges that the economy is going to throw at you. And they got rid of Lord Brown. The economy went through a difficult time. And they moved right beyond petroleum back to petroleum.
Let me give you the example of Walmart in terms of this, because I completely understand what you're saying, and I applaud it. And then I come up with a company like Walmart, which on the one hand has done a lot to become a greener, more sustainable company. It has the advantage, let's say, or the world has the advantage in the sense that if Walmart goes green, that means a whole lot of other people go green as well. And yet, on the other hand, Walmart is, you know, based on a global supply chain that in itself may be unsustainable, that in some very fundamental ways, Walmart's basic business model doesn't really conform to a lot of the things that you're talking about, responsibility to stakeholders as a whole. So how does one deal with that?
Well, you know, that's probably one of the most challenging questions, and that's a particularly challenging example. I mean, on the one hand, I cheer when Walmart makes progress, but it doesn't stop me from continuing to challenge them on issues like labor, as well as supply chain. It was fascinating to read the story last month in The Atlantic magazine where the writer made an argument that said that Walmart was actually doing a better job of sourcing and selling local organic produce than Whole Foods was. So it's interesting to see how a company as large as they have used their capabilities and their logistics to do something that is sort of counterintuitive to where a large company would focus. But I agree with you that at the end of the day, if the mission of the company is to sell the cheapest stuff at the lowest price possible, that is not sustainable. And I think that at some point, Walmart will have to come to terms with aligning its mission with its so-called values, because a mission to sell stuff as cheaply as possible is done by externalizing your costs more effectively than other people, as well as through efficiency and logistics. But the externalization of costs is certainly not sustainable and takes us in the opposite direction. I think the challenge, and ultimately the way I make a decision about these companies, is I say, given their size compared to their peers, are they moving in the right direction quickly enough, and are they making commitments that are bold enough to make me believe that they're really committed to changing? And the conclusion I come to in Walmart's case is that compared to their peers, they don't apologize for being so big. They're moving quicker than many of their retail competitors, not despite the fact that companies like Tesco are doing some interesting things. Marks and Spencer, which we talk about in the book quite a bit, is doing many, many wonderful things. So I'm still willing to support Walmart's progress as long as they're willing to hear my criticism of where they're falling short.
And when you say mission, you say that the revolution is about more than cutting carbon or reducing energy use or even monitoring your supply chain for labor practices. Tell us about your company's mission statement. Give us your mission statement and deconstruct it for us.
Sure. It's important to know that the mission doesn't exist in isolation. So we have our name. In our every deliberation, we must consider the impact of our decision on the next seven generations. So our name provides us with guidance, unlike the names of most companies. Tide or Bounty does not tell you much about what the company is or what it's committed to. Our mission is to inspire a more conscious and sustainable world by being an authentic force for positive change. It's why I've been working here for 22 years. It's why I come up and get to work every day, because that is also who I am and what I want to do, albeit an unusual mission for a company. Consciousness is something that often falls outside the realm of what we think is supposed to happen at work. But consciousness is one of the primary obstacles and restraints, or the lack of consciousness, because we are so wedded to the patterns of how we have done things in the past that in some ways we almost become unconscious to those patterns and their unintended impacts. So consciousness for us also implies thinking in a more holistic, reflective, sustainable, and systemic fashion. So we want to create a more conscious society that thinks about the interconnections and interrelationships and interdependencies. We want to create a sustainable world, and again, by sustainable, we're not talking just about the environment. Sustainability to us is as much about justice and equity as it is about protecting rainforests and ensuring that we have enough fresh water to drink. We're going to do that by being an authentic force, and authentic means that we will be radically transparent, because authenticity is not something that we can determine or judge. Authenticity is something that is judged by our stakeholders. Do they know what they want to know? Do they have the information they need to make decisions about supporting us, investing in us, buying from us? So we need to be a authentic force to bring about positive change. Positive change, again, and I think we make life difficult for ourselves, because life would be easier if positive change meant just stopping global warming or eliminating hunger or ensuring that everyone had health care. Positive change, again, is reflective of a systemic approach. And unfortunately, while it is critical and perhaps at the moment the most urgent to deal with things like global climate change. Fixing global climate change will not create by itself a just and equitable world. It will not eliminate the poverty and the hunger and the incredible stress that billions of people feel every day. So while it might be a priority, we would never say that that in itself is something that we should dedicate ourselves to completely.
Justice and equity begin at home. And you talk a lot in your book, Jeffrey Hollander, The Responsibility Revolution. You talk a lot about building community. I want to ask you, how do you do that within Seventh Generation?
In some ways, building community is becoming a lost art. It's certainly not a science, but building community is something that is probably one of, if not, you know, the most important thing we do, because you're absolutely right. You know, if you want to be responsible, it starts at home. You can't have a green product made by workers and employees who are treated poorly. So community combines both, on the one hand, a place where people can be who they are, who they want to be, who they can grow, they can develop, they can blossom, if you like, into full human beings, exploring their potential, having space to make mistakes. And at the same time, a group of people that are passionately connected to a common purpose, all working towards the greater whole rather than their personal objectives or the objectives of their department. That community needs to be led by people who are committed to behaving in a relatively humble fashion. We very much embrace the notion that leaders should ensure and support the success of the people that they lead. And, you know, W. L. Gore even goes further than that. W. L. Gore talks about that leaders can only become leaders because they have a group of followers who have selected them as leaders. And I think in many respects, some of the things that W. L. Gore does to create community are several steps ahead of where we are today, although they've been practicing it for a lot longer.
You talk about profits in a very different way from the CEOs of a lot of companies. What do you see as the position of profits, the primacy? Are they still primary? Are they secondary to other things? Or do you have a whole different way of looking at them?
Yeah. To be sustainable, it has to be profitable. In this business environment, we need to attract capital. And in order to attract capital, we have to be reasonably profitable. I think that there's a big difference between a hedge fund manager who earns $1.5 billion in 1 year, or a CEO that earns 500 to 1,000 times what other employees earn. We have lost any sense of what reasonable profits are. And the challenge we face with the banking and the finance industry now is basically unrestrained greed with no regulation to create boundaries around what is okay and not okay to do to make those profits. I also think that there is a total absence of morality or ethics, because what goes in my pocket is in many cases not going into someone else's pocket. So yes, we are committed to being profitable, but we're also committed and have been historically committed to giving 1 to 2% of the ownership of the company to our employees every year, which dilutes the profits that go to our shareholders. We're committed to donating 10% of our operating profits to charitable and nonprofit organizations. We're committed to moving towards full cost accounting, where we take responsibility for our own externalities.
And explain that, for example.
For example, palm oil is a plant that has a number of benefits over petroleum. But at the same time, traditional palm oil is grown in giant plantations, which have been put in place by cutting down the rainforest and then burning it, displacing native cultures, native agriculture, creating terribly poor conditions for workers. And so knowing that we are using a raw material that comes with a whole bunch of negative externalities attached to it, we are not comfortable in using that resource and have switched to purchasing sustainably harvested palm oil, which is more expensive. But we voluntarily made that decision because we didn't want to get a cheaper product that was cheaper because it burned down the rainforest, paid people less money, and destroyed a local culture as well as the local wildlife and animals and everything else that surrounded it. There are many places where we will pay more money to buy something where that higher price reflects the inclusion of the responsibility for some of those externalities.
Okay, so you are going to maybe cut into your profits a bit. You might be charging a higher price. How do you go up against another company that's in the same field as yours, household cleaners and products like that, that isn't making those decisions?
Well, you know, first of all, we make products that work just as well as our competitors' products, so no one is giving up performance. Secondly, we limit the price premium and increasingly try to ensure that our products are priced comparably. At the end of the day, when you look around the world and you see all of the challenges that we face and all the things that are going wrong and all the things that you worry about, consumers that understand that every time they buy dish liquid or bathroom tissue are buying a product from a company that is working day and night, has worked for 22 years, to solve the problems that they are most concerned about. When they understand and build that very deep, passionate, and trusting relationship with us, you know, even though some laundry detergents might be whiter than white and certain paper towels might be able to hold a coffee cup when they're wet, those benefits don't compare to the positive feelings that our customers have about the role that we play in the world and their desire to help us succeed in that role.
And finally, we began talking a bit about greenwashing. You know, everybody's getting on the green and sustainable bandwagon, but as you point out in your book, The Responsibility Revolution, there was a study by TerraChoice in 2009 that showed that about 98% of companies making green claims, in fact, there was not so much truth in advertising there. So I want to ask you, what's your prognosis for this kind of conscious capitalism, this better capitalism, especially now in a time where the dog-eat-dog environment seems to be more intense than ever?
I think the answer to the question is, I think we will get there because there's no alternative. We cannot proceed down the path we are. I think the question is, how long will it take and how painful will it be? You know, if we have 20 more Hurricane Katrinas or we have 20 more earthquakes like Haiti experienced, there are externalities that will accelerate our path, our progress down this path. My hope is that we can see a little bit ahead of the curve and act before those negative situations are inflicted upon us.
Jeffrey Hollander, your book is The Responsibility Revolution. Your company is Seventh Generation. Thanks so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.